Hey, buddies. It is the Massive Report podcast brought to you by Land Grant Brewing Company at 424 West Town Street in East Franklinton and the Old North Arcade at 2591 North High Street. 21 and up arcade, dozens of classic arcade games, foosball, air hockey, and a dope porch. It is episode 238 of this very distinguished podcast. We're recording July 24th after a tremendous victory for Columbus Crew SC. We're just really tickled to be talking about it with you guys right about now. Joining us, first of all, myself, Bart Logan. We've also got Patrick Murphy. Pat, what it is?
Not much. Just got back from a run, so I'm feeling healthy.
Not only that, but ladies and gentlemen, Patrick has a date with Destiny tonight.
That I do.
That's what we got. We're looking forward to that. Ralph Schudel also with us. Ralph, what's going on, sir?
I'm pleased. The weather seems to be turning around. The humidity is going down. And I'm really wondering who this Destiny girl is, because Pat has to pass all his dates past me first.
I didn't say it was a girl, just so we're clear.
Oh.
Ooh. We're an open and welcoming podcast. We've also got Alex Stanek with us. Alex, how are you?
I'm just going to keep talking so Patrick doesn't have a time to kind of clarify. I'm just going to kill a little bit more time here. Let me see. Weather's pretty nice out. It's very mild. I'm enjoying that. Yeah, that's all I got.
Okay, go on, Patrick.
No, we'll just leave.
And then also we've got Sam Fahmy. Sam, how are you doing, sir? So good to have you back.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me back. I got to display some measure of soccer skills on Saturday, which received the applause of Section 131, I believe. So I thought I'd make a showing on the podcast.
Oh man, I missed that one. But
you got to strike while it's hot.
I like it. Well, please describe this measure of soccer skills for those of us that might have missed all the action.
It was on one of the goal kicks, I believe, and the ball kind of, I was standing to the left, stage right, actually, and the ball came kind of rolling towards me, and I stopped it, and it kind of got away, and I was able to stop it again, and then I kind of did a back foot to the ball kid, just kind of wrapped it around my back leg, and yeah,
more
it was kind of
busting out the techers.
More That's than right. just a podcast host and a photographer, kids.
Yes, I did it holding my monopod and my other camera at the same time.
Don't ever let everyone like complain and it's like, oh well, these guys didn't play the game, they don't know what they're talking about. Look at Sam.
Oh, we got skills.
Well, Columbus Crew SC put their skills on display Saturday as well, earning the big win against the Philadelphia Union. Looking forward to breaking down that game for you. Another big game for the three in the back. For Columbus, as they now have consecutive shutouts with that three-man backfield. And the two rookies, Lalas Abubakar and Alex Crenali, really shining in that formation. So we'll talk a little bit about their contributions, as well as some good contributions from Jonathan Mensah, what we wouldn't have expected after some of those displays from a couple weeks back. I will also preview Wednesday's match against Philly, and Andre Blakeless, Philadelphia Union. Maybe talk a little bit about the upcoming game against Real Salt Lake on Saturday, as well as USA versus Jamaica. And we'll answer some of your questions if you tweeted us at Massive Report, use that hashtag MRPod. If you tweet us now, we will be able to get them in real time. But again, you're going to be listening to this after the fact, so that doesn't really matter. But just keep tweeting us all the time, and we'll share the fellas' Twitter handles there for you, too, and the information or something, so you can bug us and harass us all week long. But first, I'm going to hand it over to Patrick Murphy to talk a little bit about the win Saturday over the Union.
It was an interesting win because, you know, interesting in the sense that it was similar to what we saw right before the break, 4th of July against Minnesota, in the fact that Columbus didn't create the number of chances that we are accustomed to, largely due to the change in formation again, going with the three in the back, two guys underneath, Ola Kamara there. This time it was Kakutamane and who else was with him? Kakuta and Justin. Sorry. Man. It's been a whole 2 days. Kakuta and Justin, and you know, neither of them were on the ball nearly as much as they probably would have liked. You know, they still created some opportunities, but it just, you know, it didn't look as cohesive, as you know, attacking flow as we're used to with this team. But on the flip side, the defense looked very good, I thought. Now, it was an undermanned Philadelphia team there without CJ Sapong, Chris Pontius. You know, obviously they didn't have a Blake in goal, so it was not their first choice lineup. Maybe resting some guys after they played on Wednesday and then play again on Wednesday against Columbus in Philadelphia. So, you know, you have to take it with a grain of salt, but as I commented on one of our posts, I think the sixth lock box that other Patrick did, you know, with the way that this team has played defense this year, the struggles that it had, you know, I pointed to the Colorado game where you give up 2 goals against a team that I think at the time had like 12 on the season, you know, back-to-back shutouts, even, you know, add a third in with the Eintracht Frankfurt game. You know, that's impressive for this team. And, you know, it's kind of like baby steps here. We're working our way to having a more solid defense. And so, you know, that was good to see. I'd like to see the attack get a little bit better. They obviously had a chance, I think, 5 minutes in, a good ball from Will Trapp to Ola Kamara that it could have been another spectacular Ola goal, but a nice save from McCarthy, I think is who it was. But yeah, so a win's a win, especially at home. They needed to get 3 points over an undermanned Philadelphia team, and now you move on to next week in Philly, or this week, I guess, in Philly.
This whole 3-6-1 or whatever we're calling it, 3-5-1-1 formation, I'm a big fan of it, especially with Kakuta Mane. I think Mane has kind of unlocked a lot of things, and he's stretching out defenses in interesting ways. Even without Higuain, who players will tell you really kind of will create space for them just by drawing defenders towards him. So I was encouraged by the game. I thought Lalas Abubakar had a great performance. He was the man of the match for me. I talked about him a little bit preseason because I liked his hair, but I like his defending as well. I think he's a really solid rookie and somebody who has a bright future in this league. And I think between him and Krenale, having those two center backs, both rookies, both young guys in this system, I think that's amazing because now we've kind of got this young core that we can build around. Trapp's still pretty young. We've got other kind of young midfielders who are coming through. Our whole team, for the most part, is pretty young. So if they can get this thing working and kind of figure out the defense, which it seems like they're getting close to doing, then maybe they can hold the core of this team together and put together a run across multiple seasons. But encouraging the last couple games, and hopefully they can keep it going. But again, it is kind of weakened opposition, so we'll have to wait and see.
Yeah, and I mean, this formation seems to be really good because I talked to Will Trapp on Saturday night, and one of the things that he said was that he was really pleased with, you know, how well the system functions, much like a machine. You could plug in parts, you know, moving parts, and it really helps, you know, the whole progress a lot better. So he was really pleased with that. Another thing too that I noticed, guys, we talked about this in the past couple weeks, was Hector Jimenez coming in the second half for Harrison Offal, who picked up a thigh contusion, or yep. It was okay.
Which is the same injury he's dealt with earlier this season.
So Jimenez
and he, just for updates, he rode the bike today on his birthday and did not take part in full training.
I hope he eats cake too. So anyway, but I liked how Hector came in the 45th minute. It almost seemed, again, I know I said this last week, that this formation suits Hector a little bit better because he played in a really beautiful cross, I believe, that started at the Justin Miram deflection goal, if I'm not mistaken. It started that whole sequence. But Hector really shown through pretty nice. And then one thing I picked up on, and I know you guys, you and Guillerme were talking about it in the box, Murph, was Ola shifting more to the right and Mane kind of pulling in more centralized. And that seemed to really put the pressure on the Union at times during courses of the game, if you guys wanted to maybe talk a little bit more about that.
Yeah, well, I think you bring up a couple of things there. The first with Offal. I thought that was a very poor first half performance from him. Now, I don't know at what point in the half he picked up the injury. Maybe he, you know, if he picked it up early enough and they tried to just get through the half, could have played a part. But they had a really nice sequence in the first half where, and Greg Berhalter talked about this today, Zach plays Offal a good ball. Offal takes a good touch, plays it to Kakuta Mane. Mane dribbles down the side. Offal overlaps. He plays it out to Offal, and Offal's cross goes well out of bounds for a goal kick. I mean, like 15 yards out of bounds.
Yeah.
And for a guy who, you know, we talk about Jonathan Mensah not living up to expectations. You know, Harrison Offal was brought in, and he's not a designated player, so I don't want to put them on the same level. But, you know, he's brought in to be that offensive-minded fullback. So we give him a little bit of a break defensively and whatnot. And this formation has kind of, you know, taken that into account. But he's got to deliver better balls. And Yuka Ritala the same. These guys have to be getting, you know, close to double-digit assists by the end of the season in order for this team to be successful. Now, the formation change changes that a little bit, I think, because they play a little bit more through the middle, especially with, you know, when Higuain gets back in there. But, you know, if you're not delivering decent balls or at least contributing in the possession, you know, I'm not sure what exactly you're doing. And I thought Hector was a lot better on that once he came in. And then the second thing you mentioned, Ralph, was Kakuta Mane playing, you know, tucking in alongside Ola a little bit. And that was a big second half adjustment I thought they made. They shifted Justin over to the right, brought Kakuta to the left, where he is clearly more comfortable. You know, for whatever reason, he seems to do a lot better on the left-hand side. And even though he's not playing as wide as he does in the normal formation, you know, just seemed to come alive a little bit more. In the first half, I thought maybe he even looked hurt. It just was weird. He wasn't running at full speed. I mean, Bedoya chased him from behind and beat him to a ball, which I don't think should ever happen to a guy with the speed of Kakuta Mane. So second half, he looked much better, I thought. And, you know, he did push up a little bit higher, had a couple chances. And, you know, I think being on the left kind of contributed to that.
Yeah, and you said something that I really liked and I forgot to kind of give praise to. But, you know, Jonathan Mensah was quite bullish this game. You know, I thought that this formation, along with moving with Abubakar and Krenali in the center, really, he looked really quite decent, you know, and I liked how he took the charge. He read a lot of good passes, actually timed it kind of nice on a few. I can recall him having a sequence where he was running, you know, past the midfield line and kind of looking to lay it off to somebody, and he had the space to dribble, take another couple more touches in the offensive zone, and he had the presence of mind to, you know, lay it off and kind of do what he was supposed to as a defender. But I really like how he really came to play. And I think he needs to be called out as a guy that's been under a ton of scrutiny this year. I think, you know, it's time to give him props. He did very well against Philadelphia.
Well, and I think as you kind of touched on, Alex, it's been such a relief to see these two rookie players and Abubakar and Krenali that have played so well this early in their career. And I think it's, again, been a little bit of a relief for Mensah to not be in one of those, you know, with the two in the back, or rather, because I think we need to realize that three in the back is five in the back. At any purpose, the players that they're lining up on the wing are traditionally defensive fullback wing backs, and they're coming back on defense to help out. But the way that those guys are, I think it's been a little bit of relief for Jonathan to know that if he's not as comfortable making those quick passes out for the back, that there's Alex Krenali in there behind him to sweep it up a little bit. And just in general, weren't playing a very strong Union team, but they didn't concede a shot on target. We talked about
and
it.
Only three shots total.
The best chance they had was what, in like the 75th minute, and it was about 2 or 3 feet wide of net. And it came from about 35 yards out. So this was a very, very it looked like Philadelphia, what we're used to or what other teams have been used to seeing with Philadelphia and their defensive play, in that it was just so smothering and didn't give up any opportunities for them to really generate any good chances. And to see this Crew team, if they can get that back end figured out and moving forward at the turn now with the break behind them, I think it's pretty exciting, the opportunities at least.
So yeah.
I'm going to disagree on something Bart said here real quick before I forget my train of thought here. But when you talk about playing, whether it's four in the back or five in the back and the different formation, we were having a conversation with a few people on the team on Saturday, and the way they spoke about it was really, no, they were really only basically playing two defenders in the back when they're playing their traditional formation. And the two wingbacks, quote-unquote wingbacks, we'll say it was 60-40 towards offense was their task, if you want to call it. So you're basically playing with two. Now you go back and you put a third one in there. Yeah, of course that's going to help. And you're not just putting a third one in there. You're putting a tall, fairly obviously fast, good in the air defender that complements, that all of a sudden you're seeing something different out of Jonathan Mensah because you have Crenali and you have Abubakar. And like Alex said, Abubakar was my man of the match. I texted that to Patrick and Patrick, and I'm like, this kid, if he gets over a couple of those hurdles and keeps his head on straight, and
you mean keeps while he's high-stepping on the sidelines?
Well, yeah, the gallop.
You know, but he keeps improving. It's hard to consider him a bad rookie or a bad draft pick. I think he has a really good chance at a good future in MLS if he continues to improve.
Where does Nico Nessa's role on the team remain right now? And if Jonathan is emerging and you're paying Jonathan these big DP dollars, and then suddenly you've got two rookies who are showing, at least in a limited run, the ability to really compete and dominate some MLS teams there on the back end, is Nico Ness, is he a player that now becomes, you know, superfluous?
I think he's expendable.
I don't think he's expendable. I think he is probably your best backup for Will Trapp. I'd take him over
Abu. That's a good point.
Well, here's the thing that I think. I mean, obviously, as we said, they've played two teams, one that was depleted and hasn't been great offensively, and one that is really bad offensively, and they probably should have beat by more. Now, that was a road game, and I've been beating the drum on how hard road games are to win, so credit them for that. But I think we need to take it with a little bit of grain of salt. You know, Lawless hasn't faced any sort of quality MLS attackers at this point. I think that, you know, this three-man back line has played together for one game. You know, Nico started the game in Minnesota. Obviously, Josh Williams came in for him. So I don't think we should crown this back three specifically as the answer to the questions. Now, the back three in general, I think, might solve a lot of the team's problems, at least defensively. And I think Nico Ness can still play a big part. You know, we saw Alex play some really nice balls out of the back, and the team's going to need that, especially if they're going to try and get the offense flowing, and we know Nico can do that. Now, as a backup to Will, I think, you know, I hadn't thought about that part of it, but could be an option. I do think that, you know, I think that Nico still has a place in this team. You know, I think he needs to get his confidence back, and I think part of the Minnesota game was to try and get him to do that, and obviously it's unfortunate that he got hurt. But, you know, I don't think we've seen the last of Nico Ness as a center back, especially given, you know, the match congestion here this week and what they've got going forward.
Yeah, and I mean, I love Sam's idea of it, because I've always thought Nico's been a very good distributor in the defensive third. But another thing too, guys, that I'll toss it out and make it a little bit more of a complex, convoluted situation is you have Gaston Sauro waiting in the wings, presumably, if he comes back next year.
I think it'll be, yeah, it would take a lot, a lot for Gaston Saar to be able to come in and recover and be able to play on that knee. We'll see with that, but I think the other complication is obviously what you do up front in that formation with the personnel that you have on this team, PP Higuain.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good situation with this team because, you know, they like, it's been no secret that they like to run this formation when Pipa's gone. And you could see just how well it could work. I mean, granted, we've already said numerous times on this show that, you know, it was against inferior competition, but, you know, a win's a win in MLS, and you take it just about any way that you can get it. So, you know, if they've gotten a win and if it works, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Now, you know, it's, I think the defense could get a little bit better. I've talked to somebody who has said that they're running two different variations of the formation, keeping one center back in with both variations, but you're going to see, you know, maybe a Josh Williams or a Nico cycle in, or, you know, you're going to get somebody else coming into that back area with the back three. But, you know, it works. And, you know, this is something the team seems to be relatively committed to. And I can remember back in the start of the year, you know, Alex said something wonderfully that, you know, if you can get a team two different looks to think about, you know, it, and this is kind of interesting for Philadelphia, is they don't know what we can whip out on Wednesday, whether it's going to be the 4-2-3-1 or this 3-5-2, you know, and if you can get a team practicing for a formation that you may not use, that's great because that takes away valuable practice time and they're going to, you know, be distracted, you know, practicing on something that they may not even see.
One thing that I've been thinking about, though, I'm not sure how radically different the three-man backline is from the four-man backline. I agree with Sam quite a bit. The more I see this formation, the more I think of it as basically our standard formation, but with another center back. And the reason I say that is I go back, when you go back all the way to when Pogatetz was playing here, he had commented that the system that Berhalter plays is basically one where, because you have these two center backs that are kind of on these islands and you have your wing backs pushing so far forward that if either of your center backs makes a mistake, there's nobody to cover. And at the time I thought, yeah, you know, that's a really good point. And there was nobody to cover. By adding that third center back in there, you have that cover. You have that player who can slide over if somebody messes up, if there's a turnover in transition, if the wing backs get caught way far forward, which happens a lot with this team. And so you have that safety net. And I think that's something that hopefully we'll just continue to see. I see no reason to go back to the four-man system, honestly. I'm not sure that our center backs are technically gifted enough to deal with it. I think that the four-man system that Berhalter plays would work in a lot of European leagues where you have really, really, you know, mistake-free players in a lot of ways. But in Major League Soccer, I think you're just going to give up a goal or two every couple games otherwise. So hopefully they stick with this thing. The only real downside that I can see is you do lose a little bit in the attack, but we have a pretty decent attack and we have a lot of dynamic players. And like I said earlier, I think Mane offers you a lot of good looks. He's a very, very shifty player in a lot of ways. He's hard to mark. He's all over the place. He's quick. He can shoot from outside the box. He can shoot from inside the box. He can lay off passes to Ola Kamara. So I hope that we'll stick with this thing because I think it would solve that problem that Pogatetz identified, you know, what was that, two seasons ago?
Mm-hmm.
And it is looking like it's a possible solution.
And I think you said the downside is you lose some attack. I think you've seen they've lost a lot of attack. Now some of that could be that they, you know, haven't figured out exactly where each other are in this formation and things like that, and that could come with using it more, but they also haven't used it much with Higuain on the field. But you know, you look at the games that they've used this in, you know, two penalty kicks in DC, only scored one goal off a deflection in Colorado, you know, a long range shot that, you know, no one closes down in Minnesota, and then another deflection goal that probably should have been ruled an own goal this past weekend. And so, you know, this just isn't the offense we're used to seeing. Now, if the team's willing to make an adjustment and willing to settle for, hey, we're going to win games 1-0 and tie games 0-0 and, you know, become a defensive team, that's one thing. the reason I don't see that happening all the time is because we know Greg Berhalter, and I think that they want to still play a possession style that, that has offense and whatnot. So I think, you know, I think that they either will need to figure out how to get the offense going, and you know, maybe Higuain will help that, or you know, you may still see some of the 4-5-1 or whatever you want to 4-3-2-1, however you want to, whatever you want to call it.
Well, I disagree with you a little bit on in terms of generating, because it's not like this team didn't, at least on Saturday, generate good quality offensive chances. You had Hector Jimenez on the back door, the Ola Kamara volley that you mentioned earlier, Murph. There are couple really good chances. I'd argue that Justin Meerum deflection was one of those where you're earning your own luck. It was 11 shots versus 3, 6 on target. You put 6 on target in a game, you're usually going to come away with at least one. But moving forward, as we're looking at, this is a team that's now playing the same team, Philadelphia, on Wednesday, just short rest, and then you have Real Salt Lake on in the weekend. So do you think they go and change up the formation? You know, is this a case of going into it, hey, we don't want it ain't broke, let's not try to fix it? And how do you balance, you know, wanting to keep that going with recognizing that I've only got X amount of players and I got to get points in these games, because they're going to be, that's four of the next five are on the road where they have struggled this season.
Yeah, not only on the road, but, you know, in quick succession, in the next two at least. And I think, you know, you do have to, while they talk about one game at a time, you do have to have a little bit of an eye towards the next game in Salt Lake City with this one. You know, it wouldn't surprise me if they don't make too many changes, just because they did have the long break right before this, and maybe with the Western Conference game where, you know, you're not, it's not a 6-point potential swing game, you make the changes on in that game and risk, you know, maybe, you know, putting out a lesser team and hoping to get a draw or whatnot. But I would think that you would see something similar, especially because it has worked. You know, it would surprise me if Greg goes away from this formation, you know, maybe some player tweaks and whatnot, but it would surprise me if he goes away from the formation on Wednesday. But he was, you know, I don't know what formation we're going to use earlier today. So, you know, you never know with Greg.
That's just him being him, though.
Well, for sure.
What is the status on Pepe Guin, health-wise?
Yeah, he didn't practice today. He came out in running shoes. Greg said on Saturday that, you know, it's a knee issue and it's all about pain at this point. So his quote was something along the lines of, if, you know, he wakes up tomorrow and he's pain-free or, you know, minimal pain, then, you know, he could train full right away. So it just depends on the pain. No limp in his walk, I noticed today, and seemed to be in pretty good spirits with joking with a bunch of the guys while he stood there watching. So, you know, maybe it's feeling better, but just not better enough. But I don't think it's enough to rule him out if we take Greg at his word and he could wake up Tuesday, Wednesday morning and you know, feel good enough to play.
I could see him sitting out yeah, the short game. If this formation worked with Philadelphia, why not use it again in 3 days, with some tweaks and responsibilities, but kind of keep the lineup the same and just save him for Salt Lake.
Sure, and you know, maybe Salt Lake, if you do put out, you know, a younger lineup or a B lineup or something like that, having him on the field could be, you know, a difference maker at one point, kind of like it was out in Colorado.
Well, and I think even when you look at this, you know, and I don't know, I'm speculating whether this is, you know, if it's going to be a nagging injury or if it's a case of pain and, you know, playing through. We've got a long season ahead of you, but that, I think, even more so supports the point Alex was making earlier about that ability to maybe run two formations and actually execute within both of them. And suddenly, if you're willing to, you know, If it's not an issue maybe for Pepa that he's not on the field because they're rest, giving him a little extra rest, and you're still able to go out there and generate chances and get good opportunities to win without a playmaker like Higuain on the field, and then suddenly, yeah, he doesn't have to play as many games, so he's rested down the stretch and into a playoff run. It will certainly be one of the big things to look at. Of course, you've got to look at, though, with these games coming up on the road and starting Wednesday at Philadelphia, Columbus just 3 road wins on the campaign, a little bit better than I think there's one Chicago actually with a worse road record. They've got more points but not the win on Columbus. But it's obviously been one of their big struggles throughout the year. There have been a number of games that they could have come away with points and that they left points, at the table there. So how important is it, is this stretch coming up, and especially this game Wednesday against a team, a familiar opponent?
I think the Philly game is really important. Philadelphia are going to be missing players. We just beat them again at home. We go on the road and get a win, I think that's a big boost for our morale. It's a big boost for our standing in the table. I think it's a really kind of not a must-win game, but I think it's a game we should win. If they had their full-strength squad out there, I don't think you would necessarily need to guarantee a win. But given that they're going to be missing players, important players, I think you have to just say, go there, get the 3 points, make whatever changes you need to make in Salt Lake, like Patrick said. But get the points against Eastern Conference teams. You know, we're right at that kind of red line, and we need to pick up all the points we can in the East and then hopefully go on to the playoffs.
Yeah, and I mean, I like that. You know, if you're looking at, if you have Andre Blake, you have Pontius, whoever they may be missing at this point, you know, I would settle for maybe 1 point against Philadelphia and Chester, and then when you head out to RSL, that would be where you would take your 3 points. I kind of want to reverse that, you know, because McCarthy is a very streaky goalkeeper. He was the starter before Andre Blake came on and flourished with being afforded the opportunity. But
he was also the first overall pick. I mean, it's not like Andre Blake was Brad Stuver or something beating him out for it.
Also true, but
nothing against Brad.
Yeah, we love you, Brad. Friend of the show, Brad Stewart. Anyway, so McCarthy's his own worst enemy. I've noticed in any game film that I've watched on him, you know, he's very streaky. He's either really on or he's really off. So if Crew SC can get to him again, maybe have those, you know, demons that were lurking from Saturday evening, haunting him, they get that win, they get 3 points, they get out of Chester. And then you go to RSL, you play your B lineup. I say you hold the line. You go for 1 point. If you get 3, that's great. But, you know, like Alex said, you have to get the win against Eastern Conference opponents because so many people are chomping on our heels right now, and we're starting to lose that game in hand advantage right now.
I think the Philly game will be interesting because not only are you going on the road, yes, they'll be missing Blake, they'll be missing Pontius, but you assume CJ Sapong's back. Piccolo, is that how you say his name? Should be back, and he's been good for them this year. On Yewu, I would assume he was rested on the weekend, so a little bit better defensively, I would imagine. So they're going to have some guys back, and probably be a little fresher than the Crew will if, you know, based on what we're hypothesizing here, that they go with a similar lineup. But, you know, a good team should be able to go on the road, use this momentum, fight through it and get a result. And, you know, we've talked on this show, I've said it a bunch of times, if this team had 3 more ties on the first half of the season, we're talking about a team that's right there near the top of the Eastern Conference. Now, obviously, you'd prefer to go on the road and get 3 points, but, you know, this could be an opportunity to kind of start getting those results, whether it's a tie or a win on the road. I do think Philly will present some challenges. You know, as we talked about last week, they were unbeaten in 3 in MLS play going into that game. Came into Columbus basically looking to sit back and try and get a tie. I expect them to be much more attacking in Philadelphia. So, you know, this may be the first time we really see that backline tested. Minnesota tested a little bit. Obviously, Philly and Columbus did not. So, you know, if the Union have a few more guys in there that can test this line, I'll be interested to watch how they handle that and you know, if they can continue to hold down the fort back there.
Can I just say that I'm very much okay that Cruz managed to avoid running into Chris Pontius with the Union of these 2 games? I mean, that's pretty fortuitous.
Yeah, well, yeah, even that and Andre Blake too. I mean, that's pretty dang awesome.
Yeah,
too,
I don't,
because
I wouldn't want to see anything with Andre Blake right now. I mean, I know he's a good keeper, but he's a hot keeper right now with the way he's playing for Jamaica.
The Reggae Boys.
Yeah, that, I mean, his some of his saves he's made in this tournament have been unreal.
That's actually not a bad segue. We will touch a little bit on the upcoming game this weekend against Real Salt Lake. But you can also catch the full preview for that on Massive Match Day later this week. But fellas, let's talk a little bit about this here Gold Cup that's going on. And a certain United States of America has made it to the finals, taking on Jamaica, who, of course, one of the surprise team of the tournament. I guess you have to say any team that isn't Mexico or USA in the Gold Cup that makes it to the final is usually the surprise team of the tournament.
Oh my God, are we going to talk about this? Can we talk about Mexico first?
Absolutely.
Mexico lost to Jamaica, you guys. I just want to say that it was amazing, amazing.
I'm sorry, I didn't quite catch that, Alex. Can you repeat that again for me?
Yeah, I'll repeat it really slow. Mexico lost to Jamaica.
No!
To be fair, this is a Jamaica team that has now been in the Gold Cup final twice and is putting together a pretty solid squad. I mean, you know, obviously Mexico shouldn't lose, but this is Mexico's arguably B-minus team of, like, 12-year-old boys they found on the street that like to play soccer that, you know, made it to the semifinals of the Gold Cup. I saw something today about them firing their coach, who isn't coaching the team currently because he's suspended, and I was like, How do you fire coach over a semifinal appearance with your very much second and some third team players? I don't know.
I'm still trying to figure out how Kubo's 12 years old because he looks a lot older.
Yeah, and you know what he did last night? Tried to get a red card to get out of the game because I think this Mexico team has done about as much as they could, and I thought every time I've seen Jamaica play, and granted I've only seen them play three times this tournament, including last night, I've been really impressed. I think it's a good group of guys.
Is my boy Jamaica Barnes still there?
I don't know if he's on this team, but Kumar Lawrence, obviously Andre Blake,
the hero.
Maddox is on that team.
Darren Maddox.
Yeah. Jamaica's one of those countries that's really benefited from MLS in recent years. Obviously Costa Rica has done that as well, and some other teams throughout Honduras throughout the 20 plus years of MLS. But I think Jamaica's really capitalized in recent years. Sean Francis, former Caruso player.
I'm going to make the fans mad.
Whose phone number I still have.
Oh, hey.
Name dropping.
I know.
Name drop. I'm going to make the fans mad. So get on the Twitter machines
which,
and tell me how
fans?
Much you hit. Everybody. I'm going to make everybody mad. I have been lusting after Darren Maddox ever since the days he was in Vancouver before Kakuta Mane. Hey,
whoa!
I'm just saying.
Keep it in the pants.
Hey, you know
we've got Destiny later.
We've got an E for Everyone rating on this podcast, Ralph. That's what the E is for, right?
Yeah, sure. but you know, Darren Maddox, when we were playing him, I think it was 2 years ago. Back I think when we had like Steinderson and all those guys, but. I like Darren Maddox. There's just something about his game that I would love, you know, we talk about a second striker like Adam John, you know, in place of Adam John or something like that. If we could get an injection of just pure speed like Darren Maddox, this is my completely unadulterated love fest for Darren Maddox right now because...
So you want Cedric back?
I love Cedric Mbwadi.
Oh,
I'm sorry, I do...
You have more soccer skill than Cedric.
No, I know I do. I played him one-on-one one time in the streets when we were trying out for the 12-year-old Mexico national team one time.
You know, I said my piece on Christian Martinez last week. I would take Christian Martinez on any team, any day, over Cedric because he has way more skill than
Cedric. Can we talk about Christian Martinez? We didn't touch on this when we talked about the game. He should.
You
have
deserve that, Murphy. You totally deserve
that. You opened the can of worms.
That's called the segue, folks.
Yep.
He should have had an assist. Oh, my God. That was a beautiful through ball. I think it was to Kamara. And Kamara tried to turn right in front of the keeper with it, and the keeper just grabbed the ball. But perfectly weighted pass. Absolutely perfect. Christian Martinez, future number 10 for Columbus Crew SC.
You sound like Roy Hudson anytime you watch Lionel Messi play.
Real Magisterio Martinez! That's glorious!
It's not bad. It's not bad. But...
Well, you know, I'm going to attribute Martinez's stellar play, and this is my expert reporting here. Is rumor on the street is he got a new haircut, so he got that fresh do. So I think he was a little more aerodynamically sound this game.
Yeah, he had the Cristiano Ronaldo kind of like shaved in line on the side of his head. I liked it. I'm a fan. Lawless still has the best hair in Major League Soccer, but Martinez is moving up the charts.
Can I just say that there's like no way that Lawless Abubakar could be 6'1", but for that hair. Like, he looks like he's about like 5'10", 5'11", but he's got, I mean, which, hey, use it to your advantage, man. But he does not look as big as he's listed.
You can bounce the ball off that hair. So.
Hey, exactly, as long as it works.
Yeah.
Lawless is probably about my height, and I'm 5'7 and a half.
No, he's taller than that. He's probably 5'9".
Okay.
A good-looking dude, though.
Taller than me.
I'm going to conclude the good-looking guy love. I'm still going to be in love with Christian Steindorsen. That is a good-looking dude. Okay.
So speaking of guys that don't get of guys that don't get much playing time, when Adam John came in to kill the game, he came to the court like he would take the ball between him and Kakuta Mane. And by the way, Kakuta Mane did a dance routine with two defenders on him.
Simulating it at practice today.
Can I say I understand that foul completely on Philadelphia because I was getting pissed.
I mean, he was just swirling around and jumping around the ball. Oh.
I tried to take a video today, but I was just late on doing it. They were all standing around Mane, and Waylon Francis kept doing a bunch of step-overs and then just falling down, and the team was losing it.
It was great. But Adam John really tried to keep it in that corner, and they were grabbing at his shirt, grabbing at his underwear, grabbing at whatever they could get their hands on, trying to get the ball out of him. But, I mean, it's a sad waste of money to bring a striker in as basically a defender, but... I guess it is what it is.
It was kind of
impressing for those last, whatever, 5-10 minutes of the game.
Can I circle back to Maddox for 2 seconds? This could potentially happen, and the person who would be the conduit for this deal would be Will Trapp, because they both played at the University of Akron together in 2011. And so he could call up his old buddy, Darren Maddox, and say, hey, we need you in Columbus.
Well, could he get Yedlin and Nagby, too, while we're at it?
Dude, Nagby.
You cannot have Yedlin from Newcastle. I'm sorry.
Yeah, speaking of guys that run fast.
Apparently, I'm as fast as Cedric, so hey, you know.
No, he didn't say you're fast. Soccer skills.
There you go.
And I'm a goalkeeper. I'm terrible on the ball, guys.
I saw you pass the ball to Josh Williams once, and it was better than any pass Cedric made.
Hey, Josh coached me really hard that one time for 30 seconds.
Okay? You would have not received the applause that I did from Section 131 on Saturday. Thank you very much.
Because I'm a goalkeeper. I make my money with my hands, boys.
I'm a goalkeeper, too.
Let's just make this clear. No one here makes their money playing soccer. Yes. or has
done at any given point.
Let's go back to the Gold Cup. We are so far in the weeds.
Good point. Okay, Alex, take us.
U.S. Save versus us. Jamaica, Wednesday night. They have got to get the win, and I think they will get it. We have brought in all of our star players. We've got Bradley. Got Josie Altidore, who's killing it.
Hey, real
Tim
quick.
Tim Howard.
I don't understand the CONCACAF rules where you can change the tournament roster midway through the tournament.
I think it's because a lot of leagues are basically going on right now, and you don't want to have to give up a star player for the entire tournament. So you can give them up for the group stage and know that you're going to get them back for the knockout stages or vice versa.
It's not the only tournament that does that either. There's other tournaments around the world. But this is it. And, you know, I like what the U.S. has done. I'm glad they're in the final. I hope they win, obviously. But is it a little sad that they have to bring in all these guys to win this tournament?
Yes.
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 Like, you know, Mexico didn't call up their Confederations Cup team, and they made the semis.
Now, I don't understand why it's like, what do you – I mean, granted, after, especially after they didn't win the Gold Cup last time around, and obviously winning a trophy is nice, but it's like, what do you accomplish? You know what Jozy Altidore is going to give you. You know what Michael Bradley is going to give you. How are you not looking at this as, what am I going to, I need to fill out my 2018 roster, and I want to build and develop this program. Why are you taking good young players out that are getting opportunities on this stage that they rarely get to be like, oh, yeah, Jozy Altidore, he's exactly who we thought he was. Michael Bradley, exactly who we thought he was.
Look, well, you've got a new system. You've got a new tactical system going on, and you have all these players who you're trying to gel into Arena's mold. And,
but
I
then,
mean,
why,
really...
then why would you have them? Why would you bring them in right there, just in the middle of the tournament?
World Cup is coming up.
Yeah, you got World Cup qualifiers coming up, but more than that, more than the actual accomplishment, it is the quote unquote sense of accomplishment that, oh, we're progressing with Bruce Arena and we're winning stuff, and that's more important than the actual win itself. Just the sense that there is quote unquote progress and that these players are learning to play together. And part of it, I mean, what was the big complaint about Klinsmann is that he kept shuffling people around and bringing people in and bringing people out, and you see Bruce Arena trying to keep a fairly consistent lineup. Yes, he brought in half of the different team, but it's from the basic core group that usually fills in your U.S. national team camp,
including Landon Donovan.
I just think if I'm Dom Dwyer or some of those guys that got sent back, I'm pretty irritated because, you know, these guys were contributing. You know, Dom scored a goal in the game against Ghana, a goal in the first game of the tournament. And, you know, he wants to be on the U.S. roster. He's not, you know, he made sure he could be a U.S. citizen to play for this team. And, you know, then he gets dumped so you can bring in Jozy Altidore, who you know exactly what you're going to get game in and game out.
He will dive in the box for you. He will dive. He is an exceptional, exceptional box diver for a 6'2" dude. And, but,
or in the middle of the field, like the other day.
Yeah.
And he loves to get his nipples played with. I know we just got the PG-13 rating, yeah. But... I'm sorry, we got the PG-13 rating. My apologies. But I'm pissed if I'm Kellen Rowe. If I'm Kellen Rowe or Dom Dwyer, I'm pissed. I'm tearing it up in the first part of the tournament. And then it's Bruce is just like, no thanks. I'm going to go back to 2006 real quick, or 2010 real quick. And, you know, I'm going to start looking through the roster. Oh, Bradley was there. Altidore was a youngster. Hey, let's get Steve Cherundolo and call Boca Negra and see what's going on, you know?
Well, but I think that this idea of, like, making the team stronger at the knockout stages, every team does this, including Mexico. Juan Carlos Osorio tried his best to get all of these major star players that Mexico has into the squad, and teams basically turned him down. Every Liga MX team basically said, sorry, we need these guys for the season. Best of luck with the squad you've got. And he couldn't get the guys. And so he tried to bring in an A team, just like we brought in our A team, but they couldn't make it work. And that's a problem with the Mexican Federation and the Mexican League. But we have more control, I guess, over Major League Soccer, and Major League Soccer likes to see their players kind of showcased at these big events. And so all of our guys got to go down. But yeah, I mean, I think you want to see the big name players. We have World Cup qualifiers right around the corner. And I mean, I like Dom Dwyer. He's okay, but he's not a national team starting caliber striker. He's not. Kellen Rowe is a good player, but he's not Michael Bradley. And so these guys have to understand that in the national team, we don't call people up based on how hard you try. We call up people based on how good you are. And that's why Tim Howard is the starting keeper and Michael Bradley's the captain, and why Jozy Altidore is our starting striker. They're the best that we have at the moment.
You call them up until you decide that you want to make a run at the tournament, and then you send them.
Hey, Pristin Pulisic is the best player on the entire program. Where is he?
He's
negotiating a deal with Crew SC in the transfer window.
Yeah, exactly.
On the internet.
Who didn't release him, I believe.
Who didn't release what now?
I don't think Dortmund released Christian Pulisic for the tournament.
Well, good.
He's not a Major League Soccer asset, so U.S. Soccer doesn't have as much control over Dortmund as they do a lot of Major League Soccer franchises, so I think that there might be something there as well. But in general, I think you want to call up your best squad and you want to play your best squad because you want this team ready to go to make it to Russia. I think that should be the goal. Everybody should be looking at Russia. the Gold Cup is fun. Beating Mexico would have been really fun, but beating Jamaica will be really fun as well. So let's win this thing on Wednesday and then turn all of our eyes towards qualifying for the next World Cup.
Alex, Jamaica can win. I just want to.
They can win, but we should win. Our team has everything that they need to do to be able to beat this Jamaica squad. Mexico, even their B or C team, whatever you want to call it, should have beat that Jamaica team. They didn't get it done. We need to get it done. We need to show the world that the Jurgen Klinsmann disappointment era is over and that we're going to start climbing back and get our shoes back on and start marching towards the World Cup.
Can the MLS All-Star team beat the Mexico B team?
Oh, yes. God, no.
Yes, they could. Easy. One thing real quick is Clint Dempsey the greatest super sub of all time coming off the U.S. bench?
100%.
I know Landon was pretty good also when he was coming off the bench, but like Dempsey went to take that free kick and the announcers were talking about it as if he'd already tied the record with that goal just because like you knew it was going in. That's just what Clint does. And
it's just so funny to like just hear how agitated Landon Donovan is calling the games with him as he's just inching closer and closer to his record.
Yeah, he definitely isn't a fan of losing that record. And
I'm digging the new jersey number, though. I'm going to say that. I know it's for the Gold Cup, and I know it's kind of a fake one, but I was kind of like, it dawned on me, like 28, oh, he's 2 in Seattle and 8 on the national team. But whatever. That's a dumb thing I just said, as is most of what I say on this show.
That's okay. We'll just edit that out later, right?
I'm the guy that does that.
Are we talking when you said best all-time super sub, are you talking U.S. only, or are we going to make this more broad? Because I have one if we're talking.
Oh, no, just the U.S. Okay. I wouldn't dare go that far.
He's going to go to some Italy player that...
I was going to say, Alessandro Del Piero. In the 2006
no!
Final.
Okay, I do agree with that. I love me some Del Piero, man.
He was a good player.
He was solid.
I would have liked to get him... Did he come to MLS for a minute?
No, he went to Australia.
Oh, yeah, that was it. That's where he went to get paid.
What about Miroslav Klose, though? I mean, we could he'd be a pretty solid sub, too, for Germany. He was awesome.
He was, yeah. That's another good one. Klose.
Let's talk about the crew.
Well, let's talk about what is the super sub, if you will, that the crew needs to make during this transfer window as we're still open. Guys, as we're seeing, we've seen a little bit more defense might now be a little bit more shored up. So is it now we're still looking at the midfield striker? Do they still need to bring in somebody to shore up things along the back line?
I heard we could bring Kyrie Irving. I heard he wants to get out of Cleveland.
Too soon, Ralph.
Can we kick Ralph off the podcast?
I'll show myself out. Right, I'm feeling a little rowdy tonight.
I might have to take this back over.
If we could go back, the gentleman I was lusting over earlier, Darren Maddox, I would be okay with something like that. Or even if we could get into, if I'm going for a wish list, and I know this is a highly unattainable wish list, but a player that I've really admired would be like a Maxi Arruti from FC Dallas. He's a decent option. He's got about 11 goals at last tally when I look there. I would be okay with somebody like that. Or if we want to go younger, yes, Bart.
Yeah, well, no, I was just going to say, because you're very, very often you see teams, the top teams in a conference that like to get rid of their leading scorer. Is there anything new that we might have any good leads on, any good where it's actually, obviously we've all got our wish list, but something that might actually be an option for Columbus?
I've heard rumblings, and I think Patrick's got this, of a certain MLS player that may be looking to be coming back here soon.
Yeah, apparently Taylor Twellman said on SiriusXM, and it was tweeted by...
John.
Yeah, there you go.
It was also written about by Kansas City's SB Nation blog.
Right, but that was a while ago.
Yeah.
But anyway... That Christian Nemeth may have an interest in coming back to MLS, and Twellman listed a few teams, including Columbus, which, you know, I don't think that would be a bad fit. You know, just, I mean, this literally was came out while we were talking at the beginning of the podcast. So without doing much research on Nemeth, just from what I remember of him, you know, a guy that could come in and do some things. But, you know, my question, I guess, is, you know, if you bring in another forward, regardless of whether it's him or, you know, anyone else, you're probably bringing in somebody to back up Kamara, and I'm not sure a guy like that would want to do something like that. Now, can he play on the wing? You know there are some options there, but you know, he would go into the allocation order, and obviously we know Columbus has the top spot in the allocation order. So if that's something that that he wants to do, you know, and maybe it's possible that he doesn't want to come back and just go to Columbus. Maybe, you know, obviously he liked what he had in Kansas City, so potential trade there with the top allocation spot. You know, I don't know what you'd take from Kansas City, but some options there. And, you know, I don't know for sure if the Murillo stuff is entirely dead. I'm not sure I'm pronouncing his name right, but Murillo. You know, that hasn't been, you know, that's been quiet on that front, but, you know, they had one transfer bid turned down, and you know, I guess I just don't know, you know, from talking to people if it's entirely dead yet.
So I pulled out some numbers since that came up earlier, but looking on Transfer Market, right now they're talking about his value being 1.2 mil. His transfer from Kansas City, by the way, if you don't know, El Gharafa is in Qatar, not the most pretty or well-rounded weather-wise place in the world, but his transfer from Kansas City was for 2.8 million. Well, 3 million U.S., 2.8 million euro. And when he was with Kansas City, he scored 10 goals in 28 games. That's not a bad clip. So
no Ola Kamara clip.
No Ola Kamara clip, but, you know, he's only 28. If he comes in as a backup slash safety net for Ola Kamara, you know, depending on whether they can convince him with that or not, and depending on whether he's dead set on coming back to Kansas City or not. I mean, there could be a lot of things, but he seems like, from a value and money standpoint, he seems that he's probably right in about Precourt and Berhalter's wheelhouse from transfer, and probably he'd be probably just under DP money, especially depending on what happens with Gaston Saro's contract.
So I got two. Well, first I have Murillo news, which is that he has unfollowed Columbus Crew SC on Twitter. So I think it's dead. It's another one of my Arthur has 40,000 followers, so he's good predictions. But I'm guessing it's dead. My prediction, well, not a prediction because I don't think this will happen, but an interesting option for Columbus, and I think I've brought this up before, would be Keisuke Honda, who's currently a free agent. Formerly yes. Attacking midfielder, right winger for AC Milan. And before that, he was the number 10 for CSKA Moscow, where he played for many years. He's, I think, 32 now, so he's a little bit on the older side, but still a pretty decent player. I think it would be a really interesting buy for Columbus, given the Japanese community here in town. He's incredibly
appreciates him.
He cannot run fast, but he is one of the most accurate crossers I've ever seen, and one of the best free kick takers I have ever seen.
Okay, Ralph, don't care about free kicks.
Pump the brakes. I love speed. I love free kicks. Okay, I would appreciate Keisuke Honda. Alex, take it away. What is he still linked to Seattle? I thought I heard a rumor that he was still linked with the Sounders.
I've heard the Sounders. I've heard LA Galaxy, although it looks like they're now pursuing Dos Santos, so I mean, I don't really know what's going on with that. The other one, Jonathan.
Don't they have a Dos Santos?
Yeah, but they're apparently, according to Twelman, they're looking at Jonathan Dos Santos now.
So all of the Dos Santos.
Apparently, like, yeah.
They've got Dos Santos.
Dos Santos.
I guess, yeah. It says LA Galaxy currently negotiating with Jonathan Dos Santos to be their third DP and arguably the best midfielder in MLS. Hashtag MLS.
That's no, that would be our tour. He's going to be the best midfielder in MLS.
Go ahead, Bart.
Sorry.
is already the best midfielder in MLS. I think I'm saying that on behalf of Alex. I think that's what he would have wanted me to say.
I want to yell at Murph real quick. Murph, I'll tell you, I have a great appreciation for midfielders like Wesley Sneijder or Iron Robin who have precision on their free kicks and know where to place the ball. I'm not all about speed.
I like Arjen Robin, who has one leg, and that's all.
Yep.
Douglas Costa. I'll go with Juventus. I know Alex will hate me for a second, but Douglas Costa, too, would be sufficient. But he's also fast.
I think Honda's potentially a possibility if they really decided to go and get somebody like that. Now, he's going to be expensive. You're going to probably have to pay him maybe more than anybody else on the team. 2 to 3 million range.
So not Bastian Schweinsteiger money?
Not Bastian Schweinsteiger money, but north of Mensa, north of Higuain. But I think that in terms of the turnaround, I mean, in terms of what you would get on the field and off it, I think it's not a bad choice. Keisuke Honda, to put it in perspective, he is a soccer god in Japan. I mean, he is Landon Donovan plus LeBron James plus, you know, Michael Jordan and Alex Rodriguez. He is the soccer figure in that country.
I didn't know three of those guys played soccer.
They don't, but I'm saying he is a superstar athlete in Japan who is really, really, really popular. And so I think you would get butts in seats in Columbus, and I think you would get a lot of interest from about the Columbus Crew overseas as well, and kind of open up that market a little bit. So I think it would be an interesting move to make, and I think it's somebody who could help the team. If Higuain's injury is more severe, then I think it would be a great move for this team because you would have cover at a 10. But even playing as a right winger, I think Keisuke Honda in this league would be a really amazing asset.
I heard Dilly Duca's looking for work.
Well, and for Honda, he'd probably just appreciate, you know, the ability to get direct deposit with his paycheck as opposed to getting it in a brown paper bag in Russia. But
that's
with the
shady,
game,
Bart, I'm not going to lie, that's shady.
That's a view, like, KHL, same thing with the, you know, hockey league in there.
Is that what Kovalchuk does?
What? Oh, yeah, all of them, yeah. They're all paid. It's not for the players' sakes. It's just that they're all run by the mob.
Never mind. False alarm, he signed with Pachuca, so.
Wait, Honda did?
Okay.
Yeah, like last week, apparently.
Oh, that hurts.
Well, there we go, guys. This is some really good content here.
Because they're going on the journey with us, so it's fine.
Exactly, that's true.
Maybe they'll buy him from Pachuca, yeah, like right now.
And Omar Gonzalez, package deal.
Go get it from Pachuca, guys. Come on, pre-court. Just make a call to Pachuca.
There we go. Well, to continue or bring this journey toward its close, we've got Saturday coming up against Real Salt Lake as well, a team that's really improved after making the change with their coach bringing in Petke. And fellas, I'm going to be the first to tell you that I haven't followed too much RSL, so if somebody's got a better gauge on this game, take it away, boys.
I think it'll be interesting because, as you said, they really have turned things around. I mean, a really, really tough start to the season. You know, they were very injured. I mean, they were playing with a lot of their USL team, which is usually pretty young kids. You know, they didn't get a win until like six games into the season, I believe. That was a big win over Vancouver. You know, it was a very tough start, and obviously they made the change in coaching staff. Brought in Petke, who strangely was brought in to coach their B team, which maybe made people think that they were going to hire him anyway to be the coach, but have really turned things around. You look at their recent wins, Kansas City at home, they drew, but before that, an away win at Portland, 4-1. They won at the Galaxy, 6-2. Now, the Galaxy are terrible at home, but still, 6-2 against the Galaxy. They did lose at home to Orlando, but you know there are some impressive wins in here. So, you know, I'm not really sure what to make of this game, just because you know this team has been up and down. But you know, I don't think it's kind of a walkover game like maybe it would have been viewed if they played earlier in the season.
Can we just talk about Mike Petke and the Petke memes that are going around MLS Twitter right now?
Yes.
Okay.
Can I sign off for the night then?
You have your date with Destiny. We forgot. Go ahead. Everybody say goodbye, Patrick. Bye.
Enjoy your night, Patrick.
I'm just kidding. I'm here till the end.
Okay. All right. All right.
I don't bail on you.
I'll try to make it quick. So Pecky had a press conference because he was sent off for protesting a foul, I believe. Card against
freaking headlock.
Yeah. And so you should just go online and search Mike Pecky press conference. It is amazing. He rants about all kinds of stuff. He has printouts of different incidents around the league where calls were either made or shouldn't, or were not made when they should have or should not have been made. And then he screams about the freaking printer is broken and he's upset about that for a while. It's amazing. And Pecky is a true Major League Soccer treasure in a very similar vein to how Frankie Hayduk is a Major League Soccer treasure. He is a unique personality, and Pecky seems to be the source of a lot of MLS memes. We had that wonderful New York Red Bulls "Why'd you fire Pecky?" press question and answer session with New York Red Bulls a few years back, and he's wonderfully entertaining. And so, to me, this game is almost secondary to all the crap that's going to happen over the next 5 days about Mike Pecky and whether or not he is going to be fined by the league for his crazy press conference, and if anything is going to be overturned or any statement will be released by Pro. Because a lot of what he was talking about was how big teams get away with stuff and little teams don't. And there's this inconsistency with how matches are officiated and things like that. So I agree with Pecky, to be honest. If you listen to the press conference, maybe you'll agree or disagree. But I thought it was interesting, and I wonder if there's going to be some sort of official comment on it.
Well, the thing that I found interesting was, if you guys have followed him on Twitter, highly recommend it. His Twitter feed has been absolutely hysterical the past couple days. He had, after the game, Pro with a thumbs up sarcastically. He had a couple butt tweets that he's just left sitting on his timeline with pound signs and exclamation points, which are fantastic. But again, just to touch, and I'll let this go because I can see Murph's getting bored, but the press conference was very similar to a more entertaining version of Instant Replay that provided a level of entertainment than Simon Borg has yet to touch this season.
Oh, and
that was
and
enlightening, guys.
I do. I mean, I do agree that the you know, games are called on a curve, but again, that's just because the Don Garber conspiracy to hold Columbus Crew SC down. We all know this. These are facts. I don't know why we keep dwelling on these points, so we'll get straight to picks. Coming up, we'll just do Wednesday. We'll leave all that good Saturday stuff for the fellas on Massive Match Day. But Patrick Murphy, why don't you lead us off? Actually, before you lead us off, I'll let you give you a little time to think about it, because we got to do a shout out for our sponsors, because we love them and you should patronize them as well. We're talking, of course, about Land Grant Brewing Company at 424 West Town Street in East Franklinton, and available in a craft beverage retailer of any repute near you, and the Old North Arcade at 2591 North High Street. Smurf, sorry for the pump fake there. Now go!
I think this team's going to go and get a result in Philly. You know, I think you can only, you know, fail to either fail to tie on the road for so long, because that seems to be a lot of what MLS victories are on the road. I think they go there. I think the defense continues to play well against a better offense. Still not a great offense, but a better offense. I think they do give up a goal, but I'm going to go 1-1.
All right, 1-1 from Smurf. Ralph, what do you got?
You know, looking at Saturday night, you know, we've made some fabulous points on the show tonight, that, you know, Crew SC defensively sound, you know, whether it's Abubakar, Mensah, Cronali, Williams, Ness, you know, Jimenez playing on the wings, Francis, the options are there. So, you know, the offense is still lacking a little bit more for my taste, but I could really see Crew SC eking out another 1-0 victory.
1-0 from Ralph. Sam, what are you thinking?
Philadelphia is not usually an easy place to play in. It's a beautiful stadium, but I don't know. This might turn
Remember
out to be their
one time the crew came back from like 2-0 down to clinch a playoff spot or whatever that was.
Yes.
That really ruined my night when I was trying to write about it, but I'm sure it made all of you guys happy.
Do you remember the times Philly fans throw batteries?
For it. Wait, that was Cleveland fans. Never mind. But I could actually see this either a win or a tie. I don't really see it being a loss. So it could be our second tie of the year, which would be, I mean, I think we've broken a record at this point at how late we've gotten our second tie of the year.
The record for ties is 5, by the way, in a season.
For a whole season.
Yeah.
Wow. All right, Alex, saving the best for last. Let's hear it.
I think it's going to be 1-1 until about the 85th minute, and it's going to be a real, real tight game, and we're going to have one sub left, and then emerging from the Delaware River like the creature from the Black Lagoon is going to be Radamel Falcao.
Just to clarify, that's the crew record for ties. The MLS record for ties is 4.
I got muted, man. That was one of my best ones
you
ever.
You got muted by Ralph. I didn't even do it.
I had a creature from the Black Lagoon reference, the Delaware River. It was fantastic. When did I get muted?
I had to get my... You made the creature from the black, and then that was about it.
Creature from the Black Lagoon. Yeah, you know how he, like, crawled out? Yeah, and he's... Yeah, 2-1 is my prediction.
I love being at the control center right now. This is fun.
2-1. All right. So we got 2-1 for Alex.
Both Alex Crenali made team of the week, and Justin Mira made the bench for this past weekend.
What?
FYI.
I didn't know there was a bench for team of the week.
Apparently, yeah, there is a bench.
So we can walk away with team of the week, but nobody wants to be an all-star.
Do they call it bench of the week?
A bench of the week, yeah, something like that. I don't know, that's just how the tweet read, Cruz tweet read.
That should have been Dilly Duca.
I heard he's a professional.
Okay. For what it's worth, I've got Crew with a 2-1 win. I'm saying Kakuta Mane gets his second goal for the Black and Gold, and getting goal numero uno, Lawless Abubakar. It's handing in. All right, fellas, any other parting shots?
At one point in the Philly game, Lawless had more shots than Philly did.
Yes.
What a stat.
Parting shot for me. Happy birthday, Henry Canrali. I didn't get a chance to thank you for your service to the country, but it was a pleasure getting to speak with you on Saturday. I know you'll probably never listen to this, but happy birthday, 97 years young. It was a pleasure speaking with you on Saturday, sir.
It's also Harrison Offal's birthday.
King!
He is, I want to say 32.
With his quad strain?
31. Sorry for giving you an extra year there, Harry.
It's cool.
It's cool. A thigh strain, by the way.
Yeah.
Semantics. Well, get better, Harrison Offal. Stay awesome, Grandpa Crenali, and the rest of you guys. We'll see you guys later. Bye, buddies.